At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Coming up on 10 minutes into hour two, and that's what happens when we get talking to racetrackers like Larry Donlan. Unbelievable. Rich Migliore could do the same thing. He could tell you stories like that. I don't even have to prompt him. He could tell you stories like that. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know if you had a chance to listen, but we had Larry Donlan from the Midwest on, and he won with an 11-year-old last night that he
wow.
claimed. Yeah, he's had for 5 years plus, and I mean, it's just, you know, it's a natural.
That's cool.
Right?
Cool. I wasn't listening. I've finished up my barn work, and I don't have Sirius in the barn. I gotta fix that.
Come on.
I know. And now I'm walking around with the dogs. I got Jack still on a leash because of his surgery, but he's actually walking good. And a couple weeks he'll be able to be off the leash, and he'll probably hurt himself again chasing a bear or something. But
well, there's all kinds of wildlife to get in to get into trouble with when you got the dogs. They'll go off and. We got the cats. The cats. The problem with us is the cats drag it back to the house. That's the.
I had the little dog one night bring a live mouse in his mouth. I didn't notice it into the house. Drop it, and then he was like pouncing on. What the hell is that? He brought a mouse into the house. I had to catch the mouse, get him out back outside.
Yeah.
It's fun living in the country.
Well, the mouse, I don't know if that's better or worse than what we had. Who was it? That was Roxy, I think, that brought in. She comes in. We had the cat door at the time. And I hear the cat door swing, and I look down, and I see she's got something in her mouth. And it took me a couple of seconds to realize it was a mourning dove. And all of a sudden, I go to rescue the mourning dove, and the thing, you know, she drops it, and so now it flies across the kitchen and bangs into a window. I go to get it. It flies out of my hand. I'm left with some tail feathers. I finally got her and got her out the door, and she.
That was
a classic. The mourning dove, unbelievable.
You got to come up with a name for one of the DT horses. It's got something to do with that dove. You have to.
I will keep it. I'll come up with something. There's been a few others. I mean, I'll send you a picture of the kitten with the squirrel that he managed. It's unbelievable. The kitten. Who showed up out of nowhere 2 summers ago, and Tina and I were sitting outside, and all of a sudden I see he's coming across the lawn, and he dangling from his mouth is a squirrel that he had, I mean, unbelievable. The squirrel that was as big as he was. I mean, it unbelievable.
That's funny. That is
too
funny.
Much.
I think your fans want us to talk about racing, though.
No, they love this. Now, believe me, they don't. They. Whatever we do is fine. What's the oldest horse you've ever won on?
I think 10-year-old. Yeah, for Mr. DeMar, we had a horse named Mr. It was Mr. Champ. It was his name. Nah, it wasn't his name. Now I'm really showing my age. Okay. Anyway, I believe it was a 10-year-old.
You and Tony. This is usually where Tony says it's because I've been dropped on my head too often.
Yeah, well, no doubt. You know, if you ride as long as Tony did, and even as long as I did, you've been on your head more than once.
Well, I did kind of reference that. You know, we were I swapped you out with Andy. Andy took that slot yesterday, and you know, you continue to deal with the aftermath of that vertebrae issue. What's the latest?
Yeah, I got pressure on some nerves. What they need to do is kind of prop up some of the vertebrae. They put almost like a stent in and lift the vertebrae off of the nerves that are giving me a hard time. And a lot of it is because of the way I broke my neck and back. It was all compression because I landed flat on top of my head. And, you know, there's all different kinds of fractures, even though all of that's healed. My spine isn't as aligned as it should be. And I guess just told me over time we were going to have to deal with it, and it's starting to look like it's time. But, you know, what are you going to do?
It's, get it, you know, get it stabilized, and you know, just whatever it takes. I mean,
the burning down my arms again, which was the biggest symptom of when I had it, when before I even knew I had broken all those vertebrae, and it's almost like an electrical burn down my arms, and that's what's been getting tough to deal with lately. Inhibits me, you know, sleeping and things like that. But listen, I'm not going to cry. We're going to get it taken care of and move on. That's what we do.
Excellent. Well, certainly the shows have been just wonderful, and they've been, you know, I think for the people that have missed Saratoga and the opportunity to come to Saratoga, it's really been a little cathartic to be able to, you know, live vicariously through the big and varied staff that is bringing the Fox show, the Saratoga Live show, daily.
It's been so much fun, Steve, and that's, I think, all of our, you know, fervent desire is that we're making people feel like, well, at least they can't be there. We're bringing some of it to them, some of the excitement, some of the enthusiasm. You know, that Saratoga always brings out the best of people that love racing. And the fact that, you know, fans can't be there, hopefully we're bringing it into their living room and at least giving them, you know, some happiness about it. I mean, it's just such a crazy year, and, you know, so many people struggling with so many different things. But I've enjoyed it. I mean, I really, the people I'm working with, I'm enjoying them on air, off air. Like, people don't see the crew behind the scenes that work so hard and I honestly do so much more work than we do. You know, yeah, you prepare for a show and you kind of go in knowing the things you want to highlight and talk about, but I mean, they're in there up early shooting stuff in the mornings and getting features and editing, and I can't say enough about the people behind the scenes, the unsung heroes, that make us all look good on camera. But I also love the chemistry with everybody, you know, on camera. I do wish I got to work with Andy a bit more. But, you know, we've been on a couple of shifts together. We've been not on the same set, but at least, you know, we can, you know, banter back and forth a bit. But, you know, Lafitte is enjoying Greg Wolf, everybody. I mean, you know, Maggie, Acacia, they're terrific. You know, Tom was great. I didn't get to work with Tom at all. You know, we're never on the same ship, but, you know, from the horseman's perspective, you can't have much better than that. You know, Gary out in California, it's been fun, and I've really appreciated the opportunity.
To have all the races. I mean, it started out where, you know, we'd have like the late, you know, the late pick four, and then the pick five, you know, to enjoy, and, you know, to essentially do, you know, a full card broadcast. I mean, a Saturday style, you know, network broadcast on a daily basis, virtually, you know, 5 days out of seven. I mean, I say this to Andy all the time, and Lafitte when he's on, and whoever else, it's a huge undertaking, just a huge undertaking.
Well, it is, you know, it's a lot of live TV, and things can go wrong. But like I said, we've got a great crew, and yeah, you know, I'd be remiss. I'd say Jonathan Kitchen is one of the coolest guys. I love that guy. We had dinner together, not last Saturday night, the Saturday night before, I stayed up because I was on Saturday, Sunday. And, you know, talk about somebody that makes you feel good. Like, he just, you know, emits a warmth and a kindness to him. And, you know, having he and Andy and their perspectives about wagering and handicapping, you know, because the one thing that I've learned, which I never thought about, Steve, is you could pick the right horses, be a good handicapper in that respect, but if you don't wager properly, you know, you're taking the worst of it. Like, that's a whole other skill set. So, like, when I listened to Jonathan talk about, you know, how to approach a wager, that kind of opened my eyes more to, like, that side of it. You know, it's such a complex thing, you know, and I, like, it's funny because then I've gone and looked at some of your stuff that you kind of approach it that way, too. Like, you understand that the wagering part is just as important as who you're wagering on.
No doubt, and personally, I mean, it's a source, more of a source of frustration. I mean, I still don't like the way a lot of times I structure, you know, bets, and I let, you know, certain mindsets kind of over influence my approach. And, you know, there's people that are solid handicappers, but tremendous bettors. And, you know, then I consider myself, you know, a much better handicapper than I am a wager maker. I mean, the structure of my bets. And I don't know, when we talk about this kind of thing, I don't know what the solution is. You know, there was a period where I only bet a certain way and certain things. I was a big exacta bettor, and that was my focus. And, you know, then started to branch out. And actually the show has a lot to do with that too. 16 years ago now. And the request, you know, I said what, you know, when I was approached by JJ and John and Gus Alonso suggested me as a, you know, as a handicapper when Gus couldn't do the Friday slots. And I said, what do you like to, you know, like to handicap? And they said, well, you know, maybe pick four. I don't think I had ever bet a pick four. I think I had played some pick threes. I wasn't even a big doubles player at the time. And that really changed my focus. And so I became very much a multi-race wager, and became my focus. And you know, whatever, 15 years later, you know, I hit my share. And a lot of times if you hit the right one, it makes up for mistakes. But there's still times where I feel like I haven't heavied up, I haven't pressed the right set of opinions enough. Probably need to do that more. You know, it's funny. I've had since John Hurd was on last week, Hurricane. I've exchanged some texts back and forth, and he has sent me a couple of tickets that, you know, some screen captures from his play, and he's somebody that focuses in on a narrow band of opinions and presses them. And I discussed this with Nick Tamaro too, and Nick talks about, you know, the 50-cent spreads, and then the dollar 50, the $2 presses, and, you know, right, getting paid when you're right, and making sure that, you know, the best opinions get the biggest return. So the handicapping is an inexact science. The wagering is an exact science.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great way to put it. And I'm a terrible, when it comes to the wager end of it, I'm terrible, horrible. And I have leaned up more on, now I'll ask Andy or Jonathan, you know, what they think and kind of get some direction. But, and the other thing with my handicapping, I handicap my best when I look at a race and go, that's the one I'd want to ride, because, you know, it might not be the favorite to be a horse that, you know, like, there's, the favorite to me is vulnerable because he's a speed horse, and that speed, and this horse is going to sit the trip. When I approach racing, sometimes I forget, and I start handicapping like everybody else would, I guess, or, you know, like, who am I going to bet on? I do so much better if I can keep my focus on who would you want to ride in this race. Well, this one, he's going to work out the trip. He's got great posts, you know, And I've had more success doing it that way. It's just I got to remember to consistently do it that way.
You know, it's funny. I'm gonna bring up a personal horse, and I just happened to watch the race last night. I was looking for something to watch, and I pulled up the DVR list, and Kid Chocolate's race was near the top, and so I watched the Kid Chocolate race, and I listened to the broadcast where as it got closer and closer to post, you were feeling more and more annoyed at yourself for not picking Kid Chocolate in his maiden breaker, and then afterward, you know, you made the boxing analogy and said to Greg Wolf, "Why didn't I pick this horse?"
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's funny because the more I looked at it, I was like, "This is the direction. This is the right direction." And you know, you're going to get a square price, and then I didn't have the guts to pull the trigger. So, my bad.
Too funny. Talk a little bit of, you know, the last couple of weeks. We didn't talk last week, so we've got the Travers the postscript. We did talk Travers, but we got Alabama postscript, and you know, we got the horses that now feel like a Derby field that is close to being set. We've got and we have seen, you know, a number of the, you know, the most prominent fillies that have come through. That includes Swiss Skydiver and Gamine, of course. You know, but others have been, you know, within eyeshot. You know, the Toneless Shape, and I suppose I think did Venetian Harbor and so forth. Some thoughts, Rich, about the last couple of weeks before we, you know, get a feel for the end of the meet.
Well, I mean, we've been treated to some brilliant racing, and I mean, Swiss Skydiver was a special performance. It was fun to watch her. It's interesting. You have her whose strength is her stamina. You know, she's able to, you know, put herself in a good spot and just kind of stay. She can keep on. Gamine's brilliant. You know, so when you have those two worlds collide, it's usually a pretty good showdown. So I'm hoping that we see, you know, everybody stays healthy, everything goes right, and we see those two square off. You know, somebody asked me, who do you like? And I really have a hard time picking between them. And you know, again, going a mile and an eighth, Gamine is brilliant. It's two turns, a little different game. But, you know, Swiss Skydiver is like a throwback horse, isn't she? She's traveled. She runs a lot. You know, horses used to get campaigned like that. Like when I first came around in the 70s, that was normal. It's absolutely an anomaly now, and I love seeing it, and she looks like she thrives on it, so it's fun to watch. But now, that was cool. What about the two-year-old of Wesley Ward's the other day on the grass? What was it?
Golden
on Friday.
Golden
Holy
Pal.
Cow. What was that?
Well, and what about the Prix de Mornay winner, Campanelle, as well? I reached out to Wesley to come on this morning, but he was getting on a plane, and so he couldn't join us, but he was traveling. So but it's funny, because I absolutely wanted to hear from him. And, you know, Toby's Heart had people, you know, I think rightly, you know, appreciative and impressed. But then I, for whatever reason, I guess because it fed into Saturday and the two grade ones, Golden Pal didn't seem to get the same, you know, the same attention that Toby's Heart got on Wednesday.
Man, that was an unbelievable performance. That was like, I my jaw dropped. And, you know, he doesn't run. He doesn't have like the typical Uncle Mo stride. He's more upright, but still covers the amount of ground. Like you think about most Uncle Mo's, they got that kind of head carriage out and down. And he didn't have that head carriage, but his stride was enormous. And actually spoke with Irad, and Irad was like, he was going fast, but doing it easily. I opened my fingers, he said, he jumped again, and there was more. I mean, that's a scary thought. You know, it reminded me, I remember talking with Eddie Maple. He went up to Canada to ride Secretariat in the Rockmans, it was, I guess, back then, the Canadian International.
Yes, yes.
And it was the older turf course. It was like a 7/8 turf course. And, you know, he said there was enormous pressure because, obviously, Secretariat's last start, something for Ron Turcotte. And he was laying second when they went in behind the tote board. And Kennedy Rowe took a step out and bumped him. And Secretary got mad and locked on the bit and took off with him. And if you ever watch that replay, it's on YouTube. He's like 10 in front. He's laying second, about half a length off the lead. By the time they came out the other side of the tote board, you couldn't see them. He's 10 in front, maybe 100 yards. And Eddie said that he was going so fast, he had never gone that fast on a horse in his life before, and all he could think of, there's no way he's going to make that turn. And thankfully, Secretary gave it back to him before the turn. And he was able to, because he said he got mad, locked on the bit, and took off. And listening to Irad talk about that colt made me think of that. Like he said, it was almost scary. I moved my fingers, and he jumped on me, and he could have done more. And, you know, almost like not knowing the end of that, the depth of that speed. That's pretty neat. That's when a horse has got that freakish dimension.
By the way, I'm just seeing on Twitter, I got to slip this in. Our friend Barky Man says that you won on a 10-year-old named Known Ranger in 96.
Wow, that's man, people are seeing information age. That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah, you know, it's cool. Like, I finally learned how to use Formulator properly. And I love going through pedigrees now, and you can click on a dam and pull up, you know, and you go, wow, I rode the sister, and you start finding all these things. It leads me down this rabbit hole that I get lost. Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I enjoy it, but I never realized that you could glean all that information out of Formulator.
That was for Bobby DeBonis.
Wow. Wow. You know what was great, Steve, and I might have said this on your show before. When I had the bug, the two top trainers were Frank Martin and Bob DeBonis. And they were fighting for leading trainer all the time, and they'd just claim off each other. Horses would shuttle back and forth between their barns. And if you were riding for DeBonis, Pancho wouldn't ride you. But then if DeBonis got mad over a bad ride, you'd walk over to Pancho and, you know, kind of kick in a can, and he'd say, you know, my boy, what's up? He'd say, oh, DeBonis fired me. Send your agent by, and then he'd ride you. And then if he got mad at you and fired you, you'd walk back over to DeBonis, and he'd hire you back. So you always had a top trainer to ride for.
Well, I've pulled up. This is something else. I've pulled up the chart. And there's all kinds of fun tidbits in here. You know who chased you home?
No, I honestly don't remember this horse. I'm sorry.
Well, you won by three, and probably chirping behind you was Paula Keim Bruno Simon.
Oh, wow, that's funny. That's very funny. What kind of race was it?
This was a claiming race, four and ups, 30,000. Non-winners of two at a mile since date, claiming price actually a 40 and on the widener and going a mile. And boy, this is a tremendous chart. It's got everything. Siaka was third with Z-Buck, who was a nice horse. Cornelio Velasquez. You had John Luke in here on one for Michael Gallo. The late Frank Alexander, who we just lost in the last couple of months. In fact, you know, I was at the track the other day for our race, Rich, on Saturday, and from behind I saw somebody with a big crop of white hair and an older gentleman, and I thought, I thought, is that Frank?
And Frank.
Yeah. This has got it all. It had Del Carroll with Pont Street, who is very instrumental in my getting involved in the game at all. Joe Aquilino, the beloved Joe Aquilino, Bobby Barbera, Jimmy Piku, Jim Bond, Carlos, Casper Moshera. This is the greatest chart ever.
Was it full field?
Field of 12. A field of 12.
And where's my horse positioned? Where did we come from?
You stalked. You sat fourth early after a quarter with Santos made the lead with the favorite, actually. That was, I think, the Moshera. Yeah, it was the Moshera. And And then you took over, you know, off the turn, and Paula was chasing you home from way back, and so was Carlos or Cornelio on Gary's horse. The jocks, Rich Migliori, Paula Caimbruno, Cornelio Velasquez, Jean-Luc Semien, Johnny V, Jose Santos, Jose Trejo, Frank Lovato Jr., Jerry Bailey, Dale Cordova, Mike Smith, and Chris DiCarlo.
Not a bad group of riders.
No. No. One. How many still active? One, two, three. Three still active.
Three still. It's been over 10 years since I rode.
That doesn't seem possible. That was right before Belmont, right?
Surprises me, too. The last week was the first week in April, I think April 5th of 2010. I had the surgery, knew for a couple weeks that it was over, but, you know, just kind of mentally dealing with it, and then went out Belmont Stakes week at the draw and, yep. You know, announced it, you know, officially was retired. And, you know, the funny thing is I still have dreams about it. Like, I'll dream that I'm in traffic and I can't get to the jockey's room, or I'm in the jockey's room and I've already checked for the race. And I'm watching the horses in the paddock on a TV, and all the other riders are gone, and I can't find the exit to the jockey's room to get to the paddock, and the horses run away. I actually wake up in a panic about it. Like, I got to get out there. I can't miss it, you know. So it's kind of interesting. All these years later, I still, or have these dreams about making weight. Those are the fun ones. You wake up, and you're like, oh, my God, I got to get in the hot box, or, I got to, I ate too much. It's so funny.
Rich, a couple of quick thoughts going forward. Bob Edwards is going to join us, by the way, excuse me, next, and we'll talk with Bob about Rushing Fall and you know, a lot of the other success that he's enjoying. But looking either back at the weekend with the two grade ones and then looking ahead to the big finish these next two weekends.
Yeah, I mean, should be brilliant. I'm actually on next Saturday and Sunday is when I'm back in Saratoga, and then actually the last 6 days, I'm going to work every day the last 6 days, so I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, again, it's just been great. Working with great people, love the game, passionate about it. We're really lucky, you know, and I mean, I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but they pay me to talk about something I'm probably going to talk about anyway.
No.
Is that all right to say?
Of course. Of course. Yeah. Of course.
I don't want them to cut my pay or anything.
That's all right. Now, we're looking forward. I've got ahead, actually. I'm going to miss the last week. And that's the one part of going to Derby. I mean, I've come in, I don't know, I've come in semi-regularly, I guess, every few days and for the big Saturdays and for our races. I guess I could be back for Labor Day.
It's going to be strange, huh? You know, now that there's not going to be fans there. I mean, it's strange at Saratoga. I just can't even imagine what it's going to feel like, you know, like at the Derby. Crazy year. I guess we're all just got to deal with it and keep moving forward, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Rich, I appreciate it, and we'll check in again probably ahead of Derby, too. You got any, you know, we'll wait till we got a feel to discuss, but I'll definitely get you, late next week.
I look forward to it, Stephen. If I don't see you, safe travels down there.
I appreciate it. Rich Migliori, everybody. You follow Rich at Richard Migliori. And Rich will be back,
obviously. Someone took the MIG. I wanted the MIG, and they took it.
No, listen. There's always look at the Washington NFL team. They were ready to, I think, come up with a name and a new name, and somebody registered them all.
So, really? Wow.
Yeah. Some guy very cleverly managed to get all the domain names and I don't know where that leaves things.
Well, yeah. That means like he'll make them pay for it.
Yes, exactly. He's extorting. He's extorting from the Redskins.
Diabolical. That's diabolical.
it's capitalism, I guess. And they jump to it. That's what I don't know. I don't know if that's still holding them back. But right at the time when the whole thing started to come down, they said that it was very identifiable that somebody had registered all the domain names. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we were sleeping. We were sleeping at the switch theater.
Well, yeah, I guess. I guess. I don't know. I guess they're just going to be the – there was – who was it in baseball years ago there when – was it the – I think it was, I forget, there was a year that a baseball cards came out, and a team, who was it that hadn't been named, that there was a new franchise, and I...
Oh, you got me, I have no idea.
And it came out, and it said, you know, it just said the town, and I wonder if it was the Padres. Might have been the Padres, and I remember the cards, or there was somebody that was going to move. You know who I'll ask? John Nichols will know this. My man John, who's a big sports memorabilia collector. John will know about this. And there's some cards that came out back when we were kids, and baseball cards came out in series. It wasn't like now where they released the whole, you know, all 700 cards.
I remember too, because we would run to the candy store around the corner to get
exactly
the new one came out. You know, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, those were good times.
Yeah, exactly. That we used to go to when I was a kid. We'd go to Frederick's in Great Neck, and it was a big deal to get and a little shop in Connecticut when I was a kid, Fairway, and they would get, you know, Series 1, Series 2, Series 3. I think we're getting old. Rich Migliori, as always.
Day.
I appreciate
Bye.
It. We're going to stay right here and waiting to talk. Bob Edwards, always one of our favorite visits. And, just as appreciative, I'm sure, as the rest of the fan base out there, that Rushing Fall stuck around for another year of racing, and we're getting more and more of this. And of course, when you got Chad Brown in your corner to keep your filly or mare going and operating at a high level, that helps a lot. Bob, congratulations on the Diana.
Thank you very much. It was an unbelievable day. You know, as you guys know, it's kind of quiet here in Saratoga, but didn't make my heart beat any less slower.
Before we talk about the specifics and about her campaign and what down the road and on the horizon, talk about the decision-making process and the difference between making the decision for a stallion prospect versus making it for a broodmare prospect.
So, you know, I guess I can start because I've had good magic, right? For a stallion prospect, if at the end of that third year, if you don't feel there's nothing that you can do to improve his resume, it's kind of, you're at the point where you probably should get into the shed and get him happy and get him, you know, get him to start breeding. Different economics involved there, right? So for a mare like Good Magic, like New Russian Fall, last year we ran an unbelievable series of races. You know, she came out, she ran in the Just the Game, lights out, almost set the record there, blazing pace. You know, Javier did a phenomenal job. Chad had her tuned up to go. We came here, you know, and run the Diana against Sister Charlie, and it was Rushing Fall's best time to date after that. So those two races, the three races for so far that part of the year, it just took a lot out of her. And when I saw her in Keeneland in the fall, you know, I just wasn't happy. She didn't look the same. She didn't have that, her eye, you know, looking at you. She didn't have her ears pricked. Her coat wasn't what it was in the past. And I didn't want to retire on that note. I just felt that she had more in the tank, and there was no reason to think that she didn't. She didn't have any bone bruising. She had no issues physically. She just was tired. It was time for her to take a break, and we sent her down to Stone Street and let Ian Brennan and the crew, nurse her back to health and give Chad a, some rough clay to play with, and we ended up kind of coming up here and ran the bogey and just, everything kind of looked like it should. And then she went to the Coolmore Jenny Wiley and did it again, and then, luckily, we were staying in top form here in Diana and ran against, champions, grade one winners, a really mean Mary who was as tenacious as they come and were able to win. And it's an unbelievable feeling.
It's always interesting when you get horses that want to be on or near the lead. And, of course, Halliday on Saturday in the four-star Dave. And you wonder about the pace, and it's sort of counterintuitive that the further they go, the more effective they can be. And I remember the horse that I think we had a lot of this discussion with was Catch a Glimpse. And everybody said, well, when she goes for the mile and a 16th, oh, when she goes a mile and an eighth, oh, when she goes. And some of that was on display, here, the going further. If they're going slower, if the pace is easier early, it's quite likely that a horse that likes to be on the front end can extend their speed because they're not being used. It's probably much more difficult to win on the front end in a sharp mile as opposed to the elongated routes in these kinds of stakes.
I was kind of, nervous. We figured Louis would be on speed horse, Mean Mary, and, watch the first set of fractions, watch the second set of fractions, a little more comfortable with the second set. And, when they got in the turn, that's when they started. Out of coming out of the turn, Louis went right in at the turn. And that's kind of, that's a little early for a spectator, or an owner. But, it kind of worked out for everybody.
There was, in fact, Andy, yesterday we were talking about it, and he wondered aloud, I think, as well on the TV broadcast, about the decision making that Javier was engaged in, and that at one point it seemed, did he leave her, was he leaving her with too much to do?
He's on top of her, and, he knows her better than anybody. And it seems like, they are like symbiotic, they've done well together. I mean, the stats, right? She's been in the money 13 out of 14 times.
Yeah.
She's 3-for-3 this season, and Javier just continues to adapt to her as she matures and becomes a more versatile horse.
We should also note, we weren't necessarily sure what the footing was going to be. They ended up calling the course firm, and it's been, we've had not a lot of rain this summer, and so even when we got the kind of rain that we had overnight Friday when it does come, it doesn't leave a lasting impression, but that's never been a concern for her. To have a turf horse that you don't have to worry whether it's going to be soft, yielding, firm, or good. That's a nice scenario for an owner.
She's a nice scenario for any owner. Yeah, agreed. And she can run anything. And even as a baby, I think, as a 2-year-old, she ran three races in, 50 days on three different tracks and won all three. And just kind of a glimpse at her as a 2-year-old saying, wow, we keep her healthy. We have something special. And the team around us has kept her healthy. Chad, obviously, takes great care of horses, even later stage horses seem to do really well with them. And we give her time off. And that's, if you look at, race record, she raced 14 starts. That's not over raced by any stretch. And that's our program. We limit the starts for her. We try to give her time, send her back home to Stone Street, let her get fat and happy and get back in the training. When she comes back in, she's ready to train. We let her take her time and let her mind be right and let her get back in training and hope to see something special again.
Well, and speaking of special, knowing that we've got, a Breeders' Cup at Keeneland, where she is what, 5 of 6?
Yeah, the one race there that does last year, the First Lady. She just, you know, and that was my decision. I mean, and she still ran well. I mean, all things considered, I think she put up a 112 echo base number. I don't know what the other numbers were, but I mean, all things considered, she ran well. She just wasn't herself. You know, she just didn't have that look in her eye. Her time was a little off, and it's just, you know, she was exhausted. It was a tough run.
Well, otherwise, she's 5 of 6. She's got 5 wins, including, what, 2 Jenny Wileys, an Appalachian, the Queenie 2, the Jessamine. it's important to note, too, because that, you know, that sand-based turf course is not necessarily a course that everybody loves. And so with that, you know, with that as a you know, seasoned season-ending goal, or at least a November goal. What is the thought? Will she run between now and Breeders' Cup?
You know, I talked with Chad, and we had this discussion, you know, early on. The plan was to, you know, not burn her out. You know, she's coming out of retirement. Yeah. You know, to do something special. And you know, I think 4 races are probably the max we're going to see this year. So we got 1 more on the table, and you know, I'd love it to be the Breeders' Cup.
There you go. You know, the Bogey as the comebacker, and the Jenny Wiley, where she just, I mean, she looked the winner every step. And then on Sunday to take the Diana. And, this is really, it's really a luxury that for everybody to have her to look forward to. And we've gotten more and more of this, I think. And I don't know exactly, you know, what, I guess it might go back to Zenyatta to some degree, and you know, that period where, you know, the realization that, you know, coming back for another, you know, another campaign, another season, was preferable to, you know, sending them off to a broodmare career, and it's definitely to the benefit of the game.
Hey, you know, it's special watching the babies be born and watching, you know, watching them come out, watching them, you know, become a, you know, a weanling, yearling, and go on to the track. But you know, having a runner, you know, and being able to win at a high level, you know, over and over again with a horse. That's why we're here. I mean, that's horse racing, right? We love the sport. My family loves the sport. You know, we love, you know, love our hearts jumping out of our chest. We love pounding on the table because we're watching the finish line from our couch lately. But there's nothing more special than your horse coming down to the wire there. Even this last race, I'd say this last race, I've watched more in the last 48 hours than any other race that we've had. Just because it's, I mean, I still get goosebumps. There's nothing like it. It's just unbelievable.
You know, and you mentioned about watching the babies be born. And I can remember that we had a conversation maybe, I don't know, 3 years ago, give or take. And I asked you at the time, you know, you were having just the incredible success with New Money and with Good Magic. I mean, there were so many things happening so quickly. And I asked you about breeding and what your, you know, what you thought, you know, how active you might get in it. And talk about how that's changed. And, of course, getting a stallion, and, of course, Good Magic with our friends at Hillendale, you know, getting a stallion, that, you know, kind of changes the mindset to some degree.
Yeah, we're blessed, obviously, having a stallion. Enough, you've seen the most recent pictures of him, but he looks unbelievable. The babies that I have are really nice-looking babies. I was kind of lucky. I think I went 8 times to him, and I got 8 colts out of him, which is a really nice thing to have, you know, to start off a new stallion's career. We have a really, really nice breeding operation. I keep my mares, for the most part, I keep them in Indian Creek in Kentucky, and then I started moving some to Florida just to have some Florida horses in the event that, you know, things happen in the world, and I'm in Florida, and I can't travel, and I want to watch horse races against Florida breeds down there. And I'm trying to be proactive, but, you know, I love the breeding end of it. You know, I've read Tessio's book. I've read, you know, the book of Frankel. I just got another one on Frankel, just trying to think of these crosses. I'm a generic drug manufacturer, right? So I'm not inventing anything. I'm just copying. So I go through and look at all the Cooler Voice Don and Judmont Don, and kind of come to these big farms here in the States and look at the best crosses and try to figure out how I can try to improve, you know, a family line or put speed in a slow horse or what have you. And, you know, we've had really good luck with it, and it's a lot of fun.
How many mares right now?
Oh, God. My wife's listening. No, I'm just kidding. I probably got about 30 mares right now. We're going to rotate some through, so I have some coming off the track. And my program has always been, you know, to buy well-bred fillies, you know, at one, you know, not so many two-year-olds in training, but well-bred fillies at one, and then try to get them on the track and make it. If they don't, let's breed them, and kind of if they don't fit our program after, you know, after we breed them, we can always run them through November. So I'm constantly moving, you know, horse through November, bringing them in, breeding them, keeping them, you know, selling babies. So it's quite a big enterprise, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, and you know, we said it at the beginning. I mean, you seem to be having success. You had success, you know, right away, and sometimes that's very hard to sustain. I mean, talk about, you know, being careful and making decisions that are prudent, and at the same time, you know, taking the risks involved to, you know, to get a good horse.
Yeah, getting a good horse, you know, a big part of it is obviously my blood stock agent, Mike Ryan. You know, we sit down regularly, and we talk multiple times a week on about everything racing. But, you know, kind of getting the team together and set up and kind of looking and seeing what we need in the draft board, right? Kind of what I'm looking for this year. Do I want turf horses from Europe? Do I want to bring in, you know, dirt? Do I want to bring in dirt speed? Or, you know, kind of what we're looking for, right? So as we kind of look at that plan, then Mike goes and sees all these horses at all the farms a couple of times. We have a short list. The auction starts, and that plan means nothing. Then it's, oh, this one looks better than this one. We thought this one was better than this one. You know, so now you're scrambling, right? So now I have, you know, 11 running backs, and I have nobody to block them on the line. But it's kind of, you got to be really systematic and try to kind of keep it like a fantasy football team and make sure you fill slots. And we've had a good job of doing that, but as you know, horses, you know, horses are living beings. They have their own mind, and you know, the best horse, you know, today could be the slowest horse tomorrow, and the one that you think isn't going to make it through training is the one for the rock star. So, there's a lot of luck involved. I mean, not to say that we don't spend a lot of time with science and the art of picking horses. There's a lot of luck involved, and you know, once you get into the training facility, and boy, if they're doing a great job, get the horse ready, and then we send it to the trainer. You know, it's a whole new ballgame. And then you add it to the trainer, now it's one more person to blame, right? You blame the farm, you blame the stallion, you blame the mare, you blame the training facility, you blame the trainer, you blame the jockey, you blame the exercise rider. So I get to blame all these people if my horse doesn't run.
Let's ask about a couple of the other stable stars and potential stars and also maybe some of the babies that are coming. And you did have a winner earlier in the meet, and you got a filly that is in sort of that no man's land or no filly's land, Unholy Alliance, who is obviously a top level allowance horse and is just a little pressed by company when it comes to the stakes tries. Where do you go with a horse like her?
So she is going to be in the Honorable Miss up here in Saratoga.
Nice.
We gave her, kind of rerouted her to Zappy. And just once again, not looking happen in Florida. We wanted to keep horses home. We thought, you know, she had kind of more shell than she had in the past, and you know, got her to the farm and got her fat and happy and got her correct, and you know, gave her to Zappy. And you know, she's had some success and some good races, and you know, some things that didn't work for her. So we're hoping, you know, now she's liking the surface up here. She obviously won up here, and we're going to take a stab at it, and hopefully she comes out of top.
Excellent. Unholy Alliance in the Honorable Miss, six or six and a half.
Might be six and a half, huh?
I think it's six and a half. I maybe not. Between the ballerina and all these other and the test and everything, there. I think it's six and a half.
I got one in the Prioress too. Just kind of. So I'm just.
Who's in the Prioress?
I got a horse named Sound Machine. So it's Florida Stakes, Firebred into Mischief. That same thing's with Zaffy. We kind of brought her up here just to see if he'd train up here to see maybe he'd slot her somewhere in the mid-Atlantic, and he felt that, you know, she looks pretty good and she's trained really well. Tyler Kaplan was on her Monday and said, you know, she's trained the best he's been on her in a while. Hmm. So, you know, we're looking forward to cutting her loose as well. And then I have another horse with Chad named Junkanoo. Junkanoo ran here beginning of season, and, you know, they said, run him long. This horse, just keep running. It's a scat daddy. Last of the scat daddies. And I've heard last of the scat daddies 5 years ago when they got into horse racing. make sure you buy a Scat Daddy because there's going to be no more. And I still have them. This is the last two Scat Daddies we had. We were Ballad Point, who ran Enforcer Dave and didn't do well because he does not like the slop, and Junkanoo, who we really think highly of. So hopefully we get a couple more shots here to get in the winner's circle here at the spa.
What? How about a horse out of Florida? Speaking of Saffy Joseph, Pseudonym, the Ontario bred.
Pseudonym is a horse that we weren't really sure what was going on. We tried a lot of things to kind of get the horse, to settle and run, and we weren't really sure what to expect. And Saffy said the horse could win, he was not 100% sure. I don't want to do it. And there was a stake in Woodbine for Ontario bred horses, and Pseudonym's Ontario bred, and we win the race. We actually put the horse in the auction the Saturday. Horse wins on Sunday, and Savvy calls in and says, they call me up for the stake race on Saturday and said, look, you're going to have to pay a late entry fee if you don't pay today. And he didn't want to pay because he wanted to take himself. So now, fast forward, the horse went on trail, and we're going to see if we're going to stakes race up with it.
Nice. How about some two-year-olds? Where a lot of people we talked to, have been delayed, obviously, and if there were any, late training sale purchases, they're getting acclimated to the racetrack. How about the two-year-old program?
Same thing. So, I've had a couple of early starts with some, like, Kodiaks and, Euros that I kind of slotted for early speed or Ascot. If they didn't look like they were Ascot worthy, we kind of dropped them in and had limited success with them as far. Had a start with a horse down in Gulfstream early on and sent her back up to the farm. And then I had a start up in Woodbine this weekend on Saturday. And same thing, just first time out, but Mark Cassidy, and she just didn't fire. Just kind of late starts for everybody and trying to, this time of year you might get two starts in them and you know what you got. So we're still kind of trying to figure out what we have.
Well, and it's that kind of year. I mean, it's funny for some horses in a program, it actually kind of works out. You look at what's gone on so far for rushing. In fact, I mean, there was going to be a second half of the year kind of an approach anyway, and so that for her, she, I wouldn't say benefited necessarily, but it didn't disrupt. And then others, others it has disrupted. It's been such a strange environment that everybody's had to adjust to.
Yeah, I do have one starting at Churchill opening week, a horse that I own with Stone Street. That
name?
Is not named currently on me. So,
you cost yourself $100 by waiting.
No, I know, and we've been going back and forth with names, and Barbara texted me congratulating me after rushing fall. I texted her congratulating her after they had a great weekend, and then she said, "Have you named the horse yet?" And I haven't responded yet to her, so it's on me. We got to pick a name, and we'll get that sorted hopefully this week.
Who's the dam?
His name is Scarlet Tango.
Okay. This has got a sibling then. No, that's that name rings a bell as a mare.
Yeah, I gotta get my book here. So what happens when you have too many horses? You don't get to name them, and then you don't have a pedigree in front of you.
Scarlet Tango rings a bell, I don't know if she was a stakes mare or she's had a baby or two
I'm just looking at the race. It's one of their premier bank, producers that they have over there at Stone Street.
Nice. Well, they certainly, from that standpoint, you've had a nice record of buying from outfits too that have been. I mean, just look at rushing with Fred Hertrick and John Fielding, who were absolute miracle workers. I mean, they just have produced, and you've had success with them yourself previously.
Yeah. And Fred, every time she wins, I get a text from Fred congratulating me. Just a great guy.
Well, Bob, you know, you mentioned you're in Saratoga. You know, I've seen you at the track now a couple of times. How do you view it? I mean, we're almost done now at this point. It's the town itself has adjusted, it seemed, and there's a pretty vibrant, it's been a fairly vibrant summer, actually. I think in retrospect, people are going to be, I mean, not satisfied, obviously, but, you know, we hope that everybody is surviving, you know, as much as they can under the circumstances.
It's funny, this time of year last year, going into the last few weeks of Saratoga, I'm about 10 pounds overweight. I've been staying up too late. I got bags under my eyes. You know, I'm a shell of myself. But, you know, now I think our latest evening was 11 p.m. So, you know, from that aspect, you know, I'm a lot healthier this year. You know, I'm COVID-free, and, you know, I'm physically and mentally better than I normally am this time of year. You know, after the basic auction, the wheels kind of fall off. So, you know, I was happy to be kind of sitting home under house arrest waiting for the quarantine and staying out.
I love it. How much time do you spend up here?
We're up here the entire, we'll be here through, you know, through the meet probably. I'm just kind of figuring out, looking home because we have a couple kids back in Florida, making sure we're managing the hurricane season properly. And,
right.
You know, my wife and I are married up here. She's she's a local, right? So she's got plenty of family up here and her folks are up here. And, you know, so for us, this is kind of our second home anyway.
Nice. How often do you come back during the a normal period for holidays and such? You know, you got the house on 5th, so, you know, you've got a full-fledged house.
So our folks come down to Florida in the wintertime because it's a little cold up here, right? So they're doing the reverse move to Boca in the wintertime. But I pop in. I'm on the board of directors of a company up here, so I pop in. I was up here twice last winter, you know, just kind of in and out, freezing, complaining, back to Florida where it was warm.
Bob, just always pleased for you, and you've been so enthusiastic and so great for the game. Continued success, and look forward to, you know, closing out Saratoga with maybe a few more wins, and then into the fall season, Derby week as well. And if we don't, probably look forward, I hope, to seeing you at Keeneland, looking ahead toward Breeders' Cup.
Thank you. We'll see you there. Hopefully, we're all bumping each other in the Breeders' Cup, and things are a little lighter, and, you know, everybody's healthy, and we get to experience a Breeders' Cup like we all want to.
Well, exactly, and waiting for some decision-making. Yesterday, actually, was a fairly positive result. There were people that were convinced that Frankfurt was going to essentially wipe out the high school sports and the, you know, the scholastic and collegiate sports plan, but they didn't. And so they're taking kind of a wait-and-see, and it feels like that, you know, that could bode positively for Keeneland. We'll see. It's tough. It's tough on everybody. Bob Edwards, though, making the most of the opportunity, and the grade one Diana added to Rushing Falls, as I wrote on Sunday, her Hall of Fame resume, and she will be a Hall of Famer.
Thanks for support.
My pleasure. Thanks for the business. Thanks for the visit. We check in. We check in every couple of years with Bob Edwards to see, you know, just the layers of commitment and added investment into the game. And he was unsure if he was going to do much breeding. And now there's 30 broodmares. That's what happens in this game. Too much fun. Bob Edwards, everybody. E5 Racing. Let's take a break. Hour two in the book, and we'll come back. We've got Alan Foreman is going to join us. Alan's going to explain the situation when it comes to racetracks barring it's taking stalls away or refusing stalls, you know, having the decision-making process to exclude horsemen. And, you know, it's funny, we talked with Hammer about the racing office refusing entries. That more when it came to horses that you know, you're worried don't really belong or shouldn't, be racing. This is a different scenario. And the Wayne Potts case with the Maryland Jockey Club asking him to leave the grounds, but there's no commission that has had a ruling against him. So it's a unusual circumstance. Then there's the Broberg situation where he doesn't have stalls at Remington. They'll take his entries, but they don't want him on the grounds. We'll let Alan, who is a noted legal mind, we'll let Alan hash it out. Back after this, Alan Foreman, Hour 3.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
In the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up,
if I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation. It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I want to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.